Welcome to the first ever episode of The Deuce, the podcast that likes to explore the second in installments of movies in franchises. I'm Bradley.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we're here to, what are we here to do, Jeremy?
So, basically, we are here to talk about sequels. So, just a few rules of our podcast, just as we get kicked off. First off, the movies must be the second in the series. No movies after the second installment will be discussed. No prequels. And we're probably not going to cover some of your bigger items, such as Empire or Temple. So we probably won't hit those. But we'll be talking to you about some of the other ones that just don't get quite as much love as their more well-known cousins.
Right. That should. We're going to examine... Are these movies worthy of being alone? Are these movies worthy about being sequels? Are these movies just worthy? At least for our, you know, infatuation of movies that we do have. So tonight's movie is actually your pick. We're going to start with your pick. And what is that?
Yep, I was lucky enough to get the first pick to kick it off. And my pick was Miss Congeniality 2.
And Miss Congeniality 2 has a wonderful cast.
That oh, man, yeah.
Includes. This is a big cast.
A very big cast.
Right, so it's wonderful. So we're going to go ahead and explain the plot, correct?
Yep.
But we're going to tell our listeners that if you want to pause the podcast right now and go and watch Miss Congeniality 2, that you can either rent it on Amazon, PlayStation, Vudu, Fandango Now, and all your streaming services for about $2.99, or you can buy it for $9.99. We just happen to have the DVD itself, so we watched it. So I would recommend pausing this right now, but for those who are all up and up, we are going to explain the plot. Go ahead.
Yeah, if you're all caught up on Miss Congeniality 2.
Which, why shouldn't you?
Which I assume you all are.
Come on.
Surely they own the DVD like we do. Okay, so just to give it a quick rundown. So Miss Congeniality 2. So for those of you to get a little bit of background, we have the opening. We have an FBI agent who has been through a pageant that she was trying to save, and now she is pretty famous. She's...
Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock plays Gracie Hart, a.k.a. Gracie Lou Freebush from the previous movies. But she has basically become a star. Everybody knows she's a super FBI agent who saved... the Miss USA or whatever it's called pageant.
Right,
Miss United States.
Now, I haven't seen... Well, I really haven't seen the first one. I've just seen bits and pieces, but you have. And there is no requirement for us to watch the first one. We just want to watch the second one and go at it. So
yeah, it starts off with a little bit of exposition about the about her being an undercover agent at that pageant. And they talk about that she has been on the news in every newspaper, which is perfect for our opening scenario where they're putting her undercover, and she's obviously extremely well known.
Right. And we'll talk about that more here.
Yeah, so they open up, she and she's on a stakeout or on a getting ready to do kind of a stakeout for this. There's a string of robberies by... Bored housewives, I think they call them.
I think I called that housewives. I think I call that Real Housewives of geriatric
of Sing Sing.
Of Sing Sing, yeah, that's what it was.
So they're talking about this, and of course Ernie Hudson is her boss. So she's he's getting ready to send them in. She and another agent are going in. Agent Klonsky. Are going in to undercover as a mother and father with a baby in a stroller. So they're going into this bank, and they get inside, and of course they are talking as loud as humanly freaking possible about being FBI agents.
Keep in mind, like, her partner, I said, looks like a chubby, like, Vince Vaughn.
Yeah, chubby Vince Vaughn.
Chubby Vince Vaughn.
And so they get inside. Now, of course, she's famous remotely at this point, and so... you know, they're talking, and like the Agent Klonsky's asking for Miss Texas's phone number or something like that.
Right.
I mean, he keeps bugging her, and they're just smacking in your face with the fact that she was on this pageant circuit. Finally, you get the housewives start coming in, and they're getting ready, and they're all FBI agenting it up. And a woman comes up and says, "Oh my gosh, you're Gracie Hart.
Oh,
you're the famous FBI agent."
Oh, I mean, like, really out loud.
Yeah, and like screaming it. And then people are like, "Gracie Hart?
Oh,
Gracie
she's FBI.
Hart? It's Gracie Hart."
Yeah, right.
And so the housewives figure it out, and it becomes a hostage situation. Sandra Bullock does this ridiculous FBI, some sort
well,
of
first
maneuver.
Of all, they're like talking out loud, like, you know, we're FBI, like talking about, like, can I get the number of the
yeah.
pageant girl, like out loud, and they're talking about that.
Which is probably what tipped everything off,
right.
I'm assuming. But anyway, so they're talking about this. It's become a hostage situation at this point. And she goes, "Are there any other FBI agents?" And Gracie looks around, and she's trying to figure out, does she rat out the other FBI agents who are still staked around? And she goes, "Yeah, there's one more in the baby carriage." And, like, doesn't even really throw the baby carriage at her or, like, maneuver or, like, lure them in. She just kind of, like, half-ass throws it at her. And the lady goes, "What the hell?" And so she starts firing wildly and shoots Agent Klonsky in the chest. So
this movie is full of, like, trying to get out of situations that are just, like, how they do it are just dumb and ridiculous.
Yes, I would agree. So Agent Klonsky takes one in the chest, chubby Vince Vaughn down. And so... they tackle the ladies. Gracie wrestles with her, gets everything free. Basically, they make the arrest. She goes to Klonsky, who thankfully has only taken it in the vest, so he lives. And she gives him the number. She says, like, 612555, blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, I would be pissed. You just took one in the vest, and
right.
she's giving you a fake phone
yeah,
number.
Yeah, here's a fake phone
here's
number.
Here's a 555 phone number. He knows better. He knows that's not real.
Plus, he's an FBI agent. Come on.
Yeah, you lost him at 555. Anyway, but there you go. So
isn't it like she gets... The next scene is like Ernie Hudson. She gets called in Ernie Hudson's office.
Yes.
By the way, another movie that fully does not use Ernie Hudson correctly.
Correct, which is most Ernie Hudson vehicles. hasn't he been, like, replaced by Keith David in movies?
I think that's Psych.
That's
I think
Psych.
He was the father in Psych, and he got replaced by Keith
I think
David.
They should have the Ernie Hudson story where he's played by Keith
Honestly,
David and not actually
this,
Ernie Hudson.
This movie should have been Keith David instead of Ernie Hudson.
Yeah,
they should have just done that.
Oh, yeah, they should have. So, basically, they bring her in and say, "Look, you're too high profile at this point. We want you to become the face of the FBI. You know, we got to figure out
right.
something else for
like
you."
Like, the FBI has an image problem.
Yeah.
Which I think
so
I wrote, what are they, the post office?
They showed what her, well, they showed her, here's all of your fan mail. And
right.
it's people who, like, you know, are like, "Hey, I saw what you did about self-defense, and I learned to defend myself, and it helped me."
Which I'm like, look, for, like, what she is, that's not a lot of fan mail. It's just one bucket.
Well, she's an FBI agent. Like, I don't think she would be. I think that is an appropriate amount of fan mail. I think the attention that she gets everywhere she goes, whether, like, FBI agent Gracie Hart, I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
I think the fan mail thing is probably more spot
right,
on.
That's what I mean. It doesn't add up.
Yeah. So, basically, she, you know, lesson number one first. Basically, they said, "Look, look at you. You are you're disheveled, you know, when you were in this pageant, you were pretty, you know, and they make a point of saying that, which brings us to our first lesson, that if you're not in a dress, you're undesirable.
So it's like, so they hire her to be the image.
Well, before that, okay. she is thinking, I'm not going to do that. My life is going fine. She has her her boyfriend, Eric Matthews, from the first movie.
So, I'm sorry, the side plot that I really didn't care about.
Right, who had been played by Benjamin Bratt, and we're all thinking, when the Bratt man comes in, they're gonna hit it off, we're gonna see the chemistry that may have existed before, and obviously she's talking about it, so it sounds like it's pretty good.
I think Benjamin Bratt's like fan base, they're like, the Bratt man!
Yeah, and we open with she's waiting for the Bratt man to show up, and she gets a phone call, and we only hear this side of it, and I will say, it is the saddest one-sided phone conversation. She sounds so, like, deflated. Now, my first thought was, it's because we just watched her setting up dinner, and she put out a Bud Light for him, and I'm thinking he is leaving her because she gave him Bud Light.
Right.
Which is grounds for any breakup, I think, at some point. But the,
We didn't repeal prohibition to drink light beer.
Right, there you go. And so you get the sense that he leaves her, and she plays it very dramatically and very sad. And the music
she's good in that scene. Don't get me wrong.
I was like, oh, like I just want to run up and give her a hug. But I wrote when I was taking a note, I wrote, this scene makes me sad. It makes me want to punch Jesse James in the face, which was her real life husband that took off with.
I must say, or whatever. That one-sided conversation, best acting Benjamin Bratt's ever done.
So, Gracie goes in. She's obviously disheveled, even more so. She's emotional. And then enter Agent Sam Fuller, played by Regina King. So they set it up as she's this hyper-aggressive woman from...
Two-time Emmy winner, Regina King.
Yeah, two-time Emmy winner, Regina King. She's this hyper-aggressive woman from Chicago that nobody had wanted to work with. Mm. She is getting passed around the FBI because, like, she's out of control.
Again, this is a good cast.
Yeah,
I mean,
very good
cast.
I mean,
it's Ernie Hudson. You know, we had Sandra Bullock. Now we have Regina King. These are respected actors.
Yeah, she runs into her just because Regina King, we get the feeling that she's supposed to be kind of a hard-ass jerk. She runs into her, and of course Sandra Bullock's like combative back and says, you know, say excuse me, or I'm sure you didn't mean to do this, and they get into it. Gracie calls her sister at one point, and which...
Right, just one of the vaguely racist things about this movie.
Yes, and so they start getting into it from there. Ernie Hudson steps in, this amazing mediator that I'm sure he is in real life, too. Props to Ernie.
When Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd argued on Ghostbusters 2, which we'll probably cover, I'm sure Ernie Hudson was just... solid.
Shout out to E-Hud on that one. So
E-Hud.
So basically, E-Hud pulls her aside and tells Gracie, look, you have the option of being behind a desk and off the street where you won't be a danger to other agents, or to be the face of the FBI. And she says she doesn't want to be FBI Barbie anymore. And so...
Oh, yeah, she does say that.
She does say that. And so she doesn't want to go through that, so she decided that instead she's going to take them up on their offer. So then she meets, I believe his name is Joel? Lois? Joel? Something?
Oh, yes. yeah.
So let's be very clear first.
Well, I thought was at first was Tom Everett Scott.
Yes, so to be very clear, it is not Tom Everett Scott. It is Diedrich Bader, who is her image consultant, and the vehicle to cram as many terrible gay jokes and stereotypes in.
Oh, it is minute terrible.
By minute. It's pretty rough. So, So,
well, at first it wasn't that bad, but then it was like,
oh no, it
slowly
ramps up. It ramps up. Like they're just like, ooh, another one, and just keep stacking them up. So, he says he's going to take care of her. He seems like he's, you know, pretty cool and everything. Then they said she's going to be his Mona Lisa or whatever, and they say they're going to skip for. Or then we see that they skip forward 10 months.
Right. This is the 10 months.
Yes.
Where she's a spokesperson for the FBI. She's going on certain shows,
yep,
and we end up going to Live with Regis.
Yeah, it's Regis and Kelly at that point.
Right. It was Regis and Kelly, but Kelly. Did the smart move, and she was not in this movie.
Right, but Joy Philbin was.
Joy,
so that was even better.
Who's Regis's wife in real life. In this movie.
So she has been, Gracie Hart and crew has been on the media and book circuit. She has a book that she's written that they're plugging.
Oh, yeah.
And she's talking about the Sing method, which is the where to strike people. It's like solar plexus, instep, mm-hmm. nose, and groin. That they repeat, well, instead of her, she doesn't demonstrate the Sing method anymore because she can't be aggressive anywhere. So they bring Sam Fuller out to demonstrate it,
right?
Who proceeds to kick Regis's ass.
I think at one point I put, who wants to kick a millionaire in the balls?
That is correct. I do. The, then they surprise them like it's, you know, this is your life.
This is your life, yeah.
And so Cheryl, who was the winner of the Miss United States pageant.
From the first movie.
From the first movie. And Stan Fields, who is like their MC for those things, played by William Shatner, shows up. So then they just kind of giggle and talk and make jokes about how they're all friends and things like that. So
somehow I don't buy that, though. During the whole movie, I mean, I've never seen the first one, but I just
I can buy the girls, but it's weird that like William Shatner is
William Shatner's just hanging
them.
Around.
Yes, it could be.
Yeah, whatever.
It's strange things, you know. So, Regina King throughout the whole thing looks very angry and very intense, and I'm thinking that she's just bottling up the anger from this movie and using it for her performance in American Crime. okay, so we flash forward then to there we're in a kind of a seedy bar.
Oh, you mean our villains?
Yes, we're getting ready to meet some villains of the piece. So we run into I really wish I remembered names.
Oh,
the
don't.
Guy who played Kubiak on
don't
Parker
even try.
Lewis Can't Lose.
The guy who was Kubiak and he was on ER for Jerry on ER.
Yep, I'm just going to call him Kubiak from here on out. And Nick Offerman, before he was doing his Ron Swanson gag, he had his hair buzz and he had his mustache
earrings?
And goatee and earrings and stuff.
Megan Mullally probably loved
he had,
this, this period.
Nick Offerman never looked better. It was, and he just talks a lot differently too, like much more fast-paced.
Yeah, it's very weird because Ron Swanson is very dry and.
And he works that gimmick a lot now.
Yeah.
On things, but he wasn't then. He was talking fast. He was younger. So, but we see Kubiak and a bad boy Nick Offerman. Basically, find out that they're muscle and hired leg breakers for a bookie.
Yeah.
After they're rolling somebody, they get a new mark, and we don't know who yet.
Oh, yes.
Flashback
to the book signing now.
Yes, we're at the book signing. So, Gracie's at the book signing for her book. Blink and you'll miss it. Moment.
Right, cameo.
Gracie is signing this book for a woman, and she says, yo, you know, it was great, blah, 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 like talking about her experience. And the woman has the line, oh, thank you, and then walks away. And that woman was Academy Award winner Octavia Spencer.
Right, and she was wonderful in this movie.
Yeah, she was on screen for about 2 seconds, and she had three words of line.
So look for that when you're watching. But and then there's this little girl.
Yes, Priscilla.
Who I said Priscilla, who looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt from 30 Rock from the Sun.
So Priscilla comes in and says that she wants to be an agent, an FBI agent, and she would really like for Agent Hart to come talk at her school to show everybody that being an agent is cool. Everybody else wants to be Beyonce and Britney, I think she says, something like that. It's basically like pop stars.
Yeah, we're talking like this movie came out in 2005.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So it makes sense. So she's like, but I want to be an agent. And Gracie is completely shitty.
She's terrible to this girl.
No, she tells the girl that that she should be pretty. She should get her hair out of her face by using some barrettes, pull it back, so that people can see her nice smile.
Well, yeah, she looks like Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Well, she does look like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, but that's her choice to look like. It's her choice to look like Jodie Foster from Freaky Friday. That's what she's
Candle shoe.
Yeah. But so she tells her to be prettier. Priscilla looks deflated and kind of walks away. Gracie.
Will this come back in the movie? Maybe.
Maybe. But instant karma, some guy comes up and says, hey, sorry to hear about your friend. Yeah, she says, the guy comes up and says, sorry to hear about Miss United States. And then just kind of like wanders off, and she goes.
So the first pageant was the Miss United States pageant.
Yeah,
Trump
she's
was not
beauty
involved.
And
in this
she's pageant. Grace. She's Miss United States.
Okay, this is from like the first one, so that's how I remember it. She turns on the news and finds out that Stan and Cheryl, Stan William Shatner and Cheryl, her friend Miss Rhode Island, get kidnapped. Gracie freaks out, has a heart-to-heart with Ernie Hudson, and gives some expository... she says that she needs to go out there and help, and she's going to be the face of the investigation, so she's getting ready to take off.
They go to Las Vegas to... because of the kidnapping.
Yes, so to Vegas where the kidnapping was. So she's heading out there, but she needs some backup. She needs somebody on her detail. So Ernie Hudson basically has some expository dialogue with Regina King, talking about how no one wants to work with her anymore, so on and so forth, and how she needs this because she's about
I
this
think
close.
His words were, you won't get, you. You'll if you want to work alone, become a light keeper.
Like a lighthouse keeper, yeah.
Yeah, that was a great joke.
It is.
But it's just this movie has a hard time, like these jokes just don't land. Like you can tell they tried or they're trying. It's just like, I feel like they didn't rewrite it enough, you know?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. So they're heading out there. Now we flash back to the leg breakers, Kubiak and Nick Offerman. Who flipped the script on their boss. The script says, or the boss says, hey, I've got this Miss United States. I'm going to ransom her off. Mm-hmm. And they say, well, why don't we ransom her off? We did all the work.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they dangle him off the side of a dam until he basically relents. And then they take Stan and Cheryl for themselves. And then cut back to the airport, where Gracie finds out that Regina King is her bodyguard backup person.
Right.
They talk for a moment, and we get another chapter out of she says they're arguing, they're in each other's face, and then Gracie tells Regina King that she might need a Tic Tac. Which comes from the bitchy musings of Gracie Hart. but yeah, she's not happy about that. Neither of them are. They're at each other's throats. And at this point, I think she's kind of resentful of Regina King, because Regina King is still dressing like an FBI agent.
Right.
And Gracie is wearing this yellow Dick Tracy trench coat thing.
I said she looked like a posh Paddington Bear.
She looks like Jubilee. Yeah. Anyway, so we cut back one more time to Cheryl and Nick Offerman's creepy, dilapidated shack that I'm assuming he lives in. And she's forced to read a ransom note, which quickly turns into her standing up against terrorism. So we know that, you know, she's the strong one. So
we head to the FBI quarters in Las Vegas?
Vegas, yeah.
And we meet the director.
The deputy director, I think, yeah.
Who is played by
Beardless Treat Williams.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because this movie loses points because it's a beardless Treat Williams.
Yes. And I think in order to just define how bad it is when he does not have a beard, I think we should just call him Spam Williams for the rest of this. So Spam Williams greets them. His name is Director Collins. He greets them just in time for Diedrich Bader to do some stereotypically gay kind of things. They said they were going to have a debriefing, and he says, "Ooh, it's been a while since I've had a good debriefing."
Right. It's just a joke that falls.
Yeah.
I mean,
they talk about Cheryl was kidnapped at a nursing home where Stan's mother was living, and they have a video of her speaking to these elderly folks, talking about like what she's learned from her grandmother, and she goes into this odd, I don't know if it's supposed to be kind of jokish, but she goes into this odd, creepy story about killing a chicken cutting its head off. And it was like, I think it was supposed to be, because they did this in the other one too. It was like, she's supposed to be awkward and kind of like ditzy, but at the same time, like dark and smart and all these things. They just like flipping that around.
Oh, I didn't get that at all.
Yeah, it was creepy though. But then they say you have a local person who's going to be showing you around, which was Agent Jeff Foreman. He's been in lots of different shows. And
I think recently, didn't we see him in Happen?
He was in a show, Happen Leonard. He played Leonard's boyfriend in that. Yeah. Yeah. So if you haven't seen Happen Leonard on IFC?
Yeah, I think it's check on it out. Netflix so, right now.
Yeah. So he takes them to their hotel. So Diedrich Bader, they get to the hotel, and it's across the way from Treasure Island, so they can see the show going on with all the pirates attacking. Diedrich Bader talks about Treasure Island. He loves it because there's men running around wet and barely in clothes, leading to an obligatory gay Navy joke. And then... finally, Gracie remembers that she's an FBI agent, and she decides she has an idea. There's limos all around, and she's going to see where everybody is, or like where the limo driver figure
so
out
just
who
like
was
us,
there.
We figured out, we forgot that she was an FBI agent.
Yes, the whole time, right. So she manages to track down a limo driver to some seedy casino and bar, and basically harangues him in front of all these patrons who are actually played by some decent actors. Again, there's people in this who I've seen everywhere.
The limousine driver,
yes,
was played by Sandy from Glee.
I wish I knew what the guy's name was. Slobotny or
Sandy.
Something.
Sandy from Glee. Not really worth it.
He was the, I think, bad guy in Tale of Two Kitties.
Which we'll probably
kitties, which
cover
we'll
that
talk
later.
About. But the driver by somebody who looks like Dolly Parton to park away from the entrance for some unknown reason, right before the kidnapping. At this point, Gracie's entourage is nowhere to be found. Somehow she made it to this casino place and tracked this guy down, unbeknownst to, like, without any FBI resources.
Right.
So then she shows back up. Gracie does, like, the next morning, I guess, and misses a press conference that she was supposed to run. So she's already pissing people off. She talks to Regina King and Foreman, and basically she says, hey, there's, like, a Dolly Parton,
Parton
who did this. Regina King... kicks Gracie's ass, which I assume was them trying to, like, in the bathroom.
Oh, in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, at one point, Regina King's character says, which is wonderful, she says, I'm your bodyguard, so I need a body to guard. So she teaches us compound words, which is really important to learn in this movie. Thank you, Regina King. So they go looking for, or they think they solve this impersonator for Dolly Parton, correct? Well,
yeah, so she, after she has come out and said, yeah, I think it's Dolly Parton or a Dolly Parton lookalike, Regina King tries to kick her ass in the bathroom, I think trying to reenact a scene from They Live.
Oh, yeah.
And it might be just because Regina King is a big Dolly Parton fan, I don't know. But,
which is funny. It's funny that we say Regina King is, because Dolly Parton herself wrote I Will Always Love You, which then Whitney Houston wrote for the Bodyguard soundtrack.
Ooh,
booyah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Circuitous.
That's what this podcast will do.
So Gracie chases down a fake Dolly Parton she sees across the hotel, just oddly enough. So she chases her, and basically
so we all know the joke here.
Yeah, we know what it's coming to.
It's obviously the real Dolly Parton.
She tackles her, and only after poking her in the boobs several times do we realize it's the real Dolly Parton.
Right.
And they're gushing, ha-ha. And there's a joke. Ha ha ha. Although it could have been somebody else, because when she was running, clearly it was a much, much, much younger person in a Dolly Parton wig.
Right.
Actually, not even.
When you said
Dolly
it was
Parton
a different
wig.
Person, I was like, "Who, Lonnie Anderson?" Like, I was like, "Wait a minute,
I'm Lonnie Anderson." Yeah. So basically, she gets reprimanded for that. And they basically get told you're going to the airport, at which point you're going to be sent back to New York, and we will take care of this. So they're sitting there. And
in the airport.
Yeah, they're sitting in the airport.
Breezeway Airport.
At the Breezeway Airlines terminal. And Sandra
Fly
Bullock,
Breezeway.
Sandra Bullock starts getting very sassy with Regina King and doing what happened to all this stuff about us being together? And Regina King, of course, reprimands her for that right away. All of that races and gets Agent Hart's brain going, and she realizes they were actually kidnapping Stan and not Cheryl. So maybe they're looking at the wrong things, trying to figure out what's going on.
And racism helps Sandra Bullock's character become a better FBI agent.
Racism fuels her.
So, wonderful.
So, Gracie, Agent Fuller, Agent Foreman, and Diedrich Bader leave the airport.
Again, that's a good cast.
And there were two other people in her entourage up to that point, and they never came back from the bar. I don't know if they just left for New York or if they something else happened to them, but they're gone at this point. But Agent Hart, Fuller, Foreman, and Diedrich Bader leave the airport and have a slumber party at Foreman's house where he continues to obsess about his girlfriend and keep talking about her and that thank God she's working late because this, that, and the other. So this is the first time that Gracie and Sam, they bond over their dead parents. We learned that Fuller's dad really took care of her because she was allergic to everything and he taught her to be tough. Gracie's mom was an FBI agent who was killed in the line of duty. And they really kind of bond there.
A hallmark moment. Beautiful.
Yes. Also, Diedrich Bader at this point shows back up with stuff for disguises, apparently. And he says, thank goodness that Las Vegas has an all-night wiggery. And so
I think you called him, like, you said they missed, he missed Mrs. Doubtfires them.
Yeah, so the next day we find out. Because they realized that, hey, if Stan was the target and they were at the home where Stan's mother was, maybe we can find out something more. So Diedrich Bader, Mrs. Doubtfire's Gracie Hart, and they go to the old folks' home. Stan's mom is there, played by Eileen Brennan.
Eileen Brennan.
Reveals that he has a gambling addiction, and there's this bit about calling the slots sluts. Which keeps coming back up for no discernible
reason.
This
is a fifth grade joke.
Yeah.
This is not... No.
And it's determined that he was into some loan sharks.
I think you forgot the aspect that they made her a Jewish old woman in order to kind of penetrate the old folks' home, like get in good with Mrs. Fields.
Yes, correct. And so she gets in there. And of course, the whole time she is like, this is a fakakata, this and this. I mean, it's like terrible. And she just is going on. So now we've established that Gracie's not only racist, but she's anti-Semitic too. And so she is, she's continuing to do her bit. She gets out of here. And they decide Foreman has to go get these sheets about different loan sharks that they can look through. Foreman goes in, figures out his girlfriend is getting nailed by the deputy director and has a meltdown.
She's getting a little treat.
Oh, baby. So while he's acting like he's going to puke, he gives away that Hart and Fuller and the car. Spam Williams balls him out, and a new video comes in saying the deadline's been accelerated. Cheryl tells us her booty was on the line, which comes back later. So Spam Williams yells at Gracie. He hasn't been, and it was kind of like he tells her she's terrible and nobody wants her and this and that and the other. He hasn't been cruel since the very special episode of Everwood. while waiting to go back to New York, Sam Fuller realizes that Dolly Parton impersonator is probably from a drag show. Mm. So they start fighting again and like choking each other to death. And I think doing all of that, she prompts Gracie to realize, you know, I should have been a real FBI agent. I love hurting people. Being hyper aggressive, and that's apparently all that's needed in this world to be an FBI mm-hmm. agent of some kind.
It's true.
So Fuller and Hart decide they're going to get back at it. So they come up with an elaborate escape plan to get out of here. Now, because it was written by somebody who loves their like odd. Probably not.
It was
politically
written by
correct.
The guy who does all those Tim Allen sitcoms, right?
Oh God, the guy who did Last Man Standing
Last
and
Man
stuff
Standing,
like that. So
Home Improvement.
Yeah. So in his true fashion, he doesn't get most whatever. So he puts in the most clever joke possible, which was, she starts faking menstrual cramps and says she needs tampons. And because men are naturally afraid of tampons, they all just fall apart. But Diedrich Bader and Foreman, who is one of those boyfriends who I guess gets his girlfriend her tampons and whatever, doesn't shy away. So they leave with them, leaving the paralyzed, hyper-masculine, other
Correct.
Generic FBI
agent behind.
So
they head to the drag queen...
So they're on their way there. In the meantime, the FBI raids Ron Swanson's
shack.
Yeah. But they already left thanks to helicopter schedules. Basically, they flew over too many times, and so they took off. And then we find out that Spam Williams, he's basically just a power-hungry douche. He's trying to get a good case so they can climb the ladder.
Right. Or to write his own book.
Yes.
Right.
That's what he put. Yeah. That should be your book.
Right.
Yeah. So they are wondering
I said it could be Miss Congeniality 3, Mr. Congeniality.
Perfect.
Starring Treat Williams.
So then they decide they need to blend in with these drag queens. And so Diedrich Bader, in yet another installment of his jokes, says he's been waiting his whole life for this. And dresses Sam Fuller up as Tina Turner, and the other two are in yellow showgirl costumes with these like feather
right.
hats and tail things that are there for comic whatever.
Racism again, yes. Because she wants to be Tina Turner.
Yeah, and she says, I don't understand why I can't be Tina Turner. And Regina King goes, you don't understand why you can't be Tina Turner?
So they go in the back looking for Dolly Parton.
Yep, and they run into Brad Grunberg. Who is some sort of a Liz Taylor impersonator, but
Greg Grunberg's brother from Felicity Heroes.
Yeah, and he's just hanging out backstage in Liz Taylor drag for some reason. In the meantime, they've realized that people didn't get out of there, so Foreman's girlfriend calls Foreman and basically manages to trace his call to the drag club, so they're on their way. Regina does Tina.
She does okay. I mean, it's Regina King.
So she does this, like, Tina Turner bit where they're doing...
Rolling on the River?
Yeah.
Rolling on the
River. So they're doing that, and of course Sandra does the Ike Turner parts to it. So they're going through all this, and they're like, we need a big number so we can get backstage, so we can talk to the Dolly impersonator. So they send out all the other Tina drag queens to back her up in dancing. She says to lift her up for the big finish, and they said no. And she said, I said, lift me up. And she pulls out an FBI badge out of nowhere.
Oh, where did she keep that?
Wherever she had it. She was clenching it hard because you can't see it anywhere. So finally they win with her being like hoisted up into the air. They go and meet Dolly, who reveals the identity of the kidnappers. Says there are people who worked at Treasure Island as pirates, so on and so forth. And then she realizes that Cheryl said her booty was on the line, and she wouldn't say booty because she shies away from that kind of blue language.
Right. She would not say that.
Yeah, and so it must mean pirate's booty, so she's probably at the ship. And so they go to the casino, and as they get there, you see Nick Offerman and Kubiak, and immediately Spider-Bait's cover of Black Betty fires off, because why not?
You're doing a chase scene. You need
Spider-Bait
that.
Lives off that song.
Oh, yeah.
And so it starts playing, and they go into a fight. Gracie and Sam fight the brothers. Nick Offerman reveals Stan and Cheryl in the bottom of the sinking boat while Sam kicks Kubiaski's ass.
Right.
So I think it was Kubiak throws Sam onto the roulette table.
No.
And then, she gets back up and starts beating him down. And right. It's just like this whole fight thing.
No.
But that's really the end of our villains at that point.
Kind of. They don't really...
Yeah,
they're
they're very minor in this.
More like Treat Whims is more of kind of the villain in a way.
Yeah, I would agree.
You know?
So Gracie goes into the ship. She swims down. She saves Stan and Cheryl. She nearly drowns because of the ridiculous costume gets caught under some wheels of a cannon. Because
she looks like Big Bird.
Right, in the cannon. Fuller saves her. Cheryl and Foreman flirt. Stan is ready to face his addictions with gambling at this point. Diedrich Bader got to wear a dress, so things worked out for everyone.
Oh. Happy hunky dory.
Yeah, it's all great.
So we're back in New York then?
Well, no, it would have almost worked out for everybody, but But Gracie Hart pushes Treat Williams into the grotto, and I assume he's dead because we don't see him splashing around.
Yeah, you really don't.
He goes head first.
A life preserver.
Yeah, he goes head first into the grotto, and they don't even have a comic like I can't swim moment. He just goes head first clonk into the bottom. But now it flashes forward back to New York. Mm-hmm. Now Fuller and Hart are partners again.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Gracie says she has to go do something on her own, but she'll be back. And she goes to the school where, Priscilla is, who is now wearing the ugliest hair barrettes ever. and like some sort of like scrunchy thing. She looks ridiculous. Gracie tells her, Gracie decides she's going to continue giving her these mixed messages about self-worth and tells her, you know, if you want to be serious, you should be less pretty.
Right.
And so she takes
the moral of the whole thing.
So she turns her back to Joseph Gordon-Levitt and then shows everybody how cool it is to be an agent, and that's the end of it.
That's the end of it. Yeah. So there you go. Yep. We just dropped the deuce there.
Drop the deuce.
So with this podcast, we decided that at the end of this, we have five questions.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
That we are going to ask each of us about the movie. And we're going to start with the first one. The first one is...
What's the best part of the movie, in your opinion?
Okay. You want me to start?
Yeah.
I think the best part of this movie is Regina King.
Okay.
Because it's such a really odd role for Regina King. Usually she's known for drama.
Yes.
And, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I think even though the jokes fall flat, the buddy cop thing of Regina King and her kind of work for me.
Yeah.
Like, just the way they interact with each other. Not necessarily, like, the jokes themselves. I think Regina King is probably the best part of this movie, and also just the way Nick Offerman looks is also the best part for me.
Yeah, I enjoyed that thoroughly. Yes. I think for me, it was a toss-up. You know, I'm always pro Nick Offerman. but I thought that, Heather Burns, the gal who played Miss Rhode Island, Miss United States,
right.
Cheryl, I always think that her comedy in these is very subtle. I mean, like, she has right. kind of, I love her awkwardness with it, and it makes me laugh no matter what. Like, in the
she's
first
just
one,
not in it
one,
enough for me.
She isn't in it enough, but I still enjoy her. And most of the time, they were just using her to advance the plot.
That's true.
But, you know, I enjoy her performance in that. But the thing that got me with this is that Sandra Bullock breakup moment on the phone. It just was so touching. And there are a lot of, like, dramatic moments with, like, her and Regina King and things like that. There's actually some nice dramatic moments.
Right. This isn't a terrible movie. It's just not a good movie. Do you
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to crap on it. Look, it's a movie that you could... Like, I think we talked about this, where you could just put it on the television and go do something. Go
yeah.
do the dishes
yep.
and have it in the background where every once in a while you look up and she's chasing Dolly Parton or whatever.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And you can go, okay, I know what's going on.
Okay, so let me, I think this kind of leads us to our next question. So this is like, for those of you who are familiar with Mary Bang Kill, would you reboot this movie, continue it with more sequels, or just cancel the series altogether?
Go ahead. You first.
Okay. You know, I've thought about this. Obviously, they haven't had any other ones, but I think continue. I think that now that it's been like 10 years, I would like to see one that came approached in a different way, maybe like... You know, maybe she's more established, and maybe you focus on somebody else, but have it tied to
okay.
that world or something.
So almost a reboot?
But have it continue in the same world with her, and maybe
okay.
she's involved in some other way, but, you know, continue it forward.
I'm kind of done with it. I mean, maybe it's just me, but, like, if they do, I would want more Regina King and her. Like, as a buddy cop movie.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be Miss Congeniality 3. Why can't it be, you know, Ebony and Ivory? Because, you know, I thought under a better script, those two could be really good together.
Now, I will say that some people actually thought that The Heat, which was a movie with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy... was supposed to technically be.
Oh.
But that it wasn't. That, like, it had other character names to it, but the rumor was, that I'd always heard, was that originally it was supposed to be the third Miss Congeniality.
Really?
That was the rumor I heard.
Okay.
And some people said, yeah, you can kind of tell it was supposed to be, but they just went, you know what, let's just start over and make
okay.
a new movie. And
like, so Escape from Mars is the third Escape movie, or...
Yeah.
Like, Mission
yeah,
of
Ghost
Mars.
Ghost of Mars, or
Ghost
whatever.
Of Mars,
yeah.
okay.
Yeah, yeah. But... I have no, you know, nothing to back that
right.
up besides just rumor. But Okay. Do you think this movie stands on its own?
Yes and no. I think it stands on its own in a way that, like I said, you could just have it, you know, and play it. I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think it's as superior as the first one. I don't think it is.
I think it can stand on its own, but you lose some stuff with like some of the jokes,
right.
A little bit. So I think if you've seen the other one, some of the jokes will be much more humorous.
Oh yeah, I guess if you were saying it like that, yeah. No, I can see that.
But you know, I think it stands on its own without it, just not as strongly without. The
yeah,
first
I don't
one.
Think it's as strong. Like you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it. I think they missed something with this movie that really could have clicked. And it just didn't click as well as it could have.
I completely
it's
agree.
The screenplay, but that's just me.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think certain parts of it, like they went for the easy jokes and
yeah.
Where they could have built something up and probably like.
Like it's not even
like you
fart
said it too,
humor.
Like,
it's like.
Well, you said too, it was like a bunch of one-liners strung
yeah.
together.
Yeah.
But you know, it's. It is. It's like they could have gone back and refined it and linked things together and have been like, oh, that's stronger. But they
right.
didn't. They were like, first draft, let's go.
And it's not like, because Miss Congeniality came out in 2000. It's not like, oh, let's write it real quick and try to get more money out of it.
Yeah, it had
like
a while.
They had time.
Yeah. Let's see. Would you, if you haven't, would you watch the first one or does it make you want to watch the first one again?
I would watch the first one because of what you said. I think that this, because it's not like it's like another pageant. Like I'm interested in kind of watching the first one because
yeah.
I've only seen clips,
yeah,
or bits and pieces. I don't necessarily think that the whole movie makes me want to watch it. I think there's certain people in this one that make me want to watch the first one. Like you said,
yeah,
what's her face, Miss
Gerald,
United States, yeah. I think she makes me want to watch the first one.
I completely agree.
I think even William Shatner makes me want to watch the first
one. Yeah, I completely agree.
I don't think the movie itself makes me want to watch the first one.
I agree. I would agree with that. Mm-hmm. Okay, and then finally, sum up your experience in two words.
Go ahead.
World peace.
That's true. World peace.
Yeah,
would be a good
and that
one.
Was actually the last line in the movie. The jokes about the world peace because that was in the first one.
Yeah.
One.
And those are the clips I've seen. Goofy entertainment.
Yeah,
like it's just this is not a bad movie. Like I keep saying, it's goofy entertainment. It's something that. Is there for you to watch. It's probably not your first pick that you would watch, but...
Right, I agree.
That's the thing. Now, also, with the fact of what we say about the movie,
yeah.
we want to know what other people are saying about the movie. So I've come up with... I've found other reviews online about Miss Congeniality, and I thought I'd read them. For instance, this person... who goes by the name Cheese Nuts, gave it a 10 out of 10 and said, not what I expected. I saw this as a special screening and was very pleasantly surprised. I'm not usually a huge fan of sequels, but for this, it's incredibly entertaining on its own merit. I love Sandra, so that may be one of the reasons I liked it as much. But with that being said, the rest of the cast... makes this, without a doubt, one of the funniest movies I've seen in a long time. This will definitely get a vote for must-see from me to all. The movie goes quickly at the beginning, and then it slows, but it keeps you interested. Sandra and Regina are so good together, which I agree. Wardrobe is great. Sandra, dressed as the old woman, is hilarious, and there are many other great costumes as well. The slow part only helps to make the real movie. I will make this a definite repeat movie. Well, I mean, what do you think about what that person's saying?
The part with Sandra Bullock in dress as the old lady, like I get it could have been funny.
Yeah.
But then they were just like, oh, let's just I'm over the top with
right.
this and this.
Oh, where's my
mama
roll?
Yeah.
I love matzo balls.
Yeah,
like
it was pretty tough.
All right. And then on the other aspect is someone that hated it, and they go by the username Holy Bagel. Holy Bagel said, gave it a 1 out of 10.
Ooh.
And said, damn. No. After seeing the first film, as I was quite excited about watching the second Miss Congeniality, disappointed is not the word. The film spreads most of its time recounting the previous story and then tries to keep going by showing you useless plot and completely bizarre stunts. Sure, there might be a few funny jokes, but seriously, the film lacks the brilliant comedy in the plot of the first film and has a completely different tone. It's immature, the predictable storyline is boring, especially the last scene, which was bordering on stupidity, which I kind of agree with. I did not like the last scene. If you want to rent a lighthearted film, do not choose this one. It'll leave you wondering while you wasted your money. Now, technically, you'll be only wasting $2.99 on, you know, those services that I talked about at the beginning. But I don't think this movie deserves a 1.
No, I think that's
too harsh. I think it deserves, like a 5 or like a 5.5, a 5.25.
I think I would give it a 6.
I think a 6 out of 10. Generous.
I'd give it a 6 out of 10. I think. I wouldn't give it higher than that. Higher, no.
So our general thoughts of Miss Congeniality is that it's a fun movie, but it's not a great movie.
No, it is a fun. So I think it is a fun, lighthearted movie to play in the background while you're washing dishes.
I agree. Like I call like The Wings, the television show.
Yes.
I think that's a crappy show, but I think it's a fine show that you can just put on the television. I think this is the same thing. Just watch it while you're folding laundry or even vacuuming so you don't have to listen to it.
I agree.
So that completes our first episode of The Deuce.
The Deuce.
The Deuce. We'll be back with our next episode, but we'll leave you with the closing song from Miss Congeniality 2.
So this was the closing song of Miss Congeniality.
One of my favorite songs, by the way. I love this song.
Yeah,
but
it's a great song. It's I'll Take You There by the Staple Sisters.
Yes. Deuces.
See you next time.